It was bonfires in the desert. It was the blue glow on the radio. It kept you company on lonely nights away from home and distracted you while you studied. It was there when Nixon resigned and Hendrix, Janis, and Lennon died. It was the sticker on your car, vinyl records, 8-tracks, and cassettes. It was local music and concerts on the radio. I'm Margie, and along with Kimberly Kraft, over the next 90 minutes, we'll look back at a very special time in the musical history of Tucson, the old Pueblo, the naked Pueblo. The friend that was always there, 92 KWFM, Tucson.
That's fine.
I've been around a microphone a while. You know, I know exactly. We're fine on that.
Right past it. That's cool.
Hi, this is Alan Browning, and it is the 6th of November, 2010, and I'm in a room with a lot of people that had input into a radio station that became a legend in Tucson. To mention a few: Jim Brady, Jim Ray, Bob Fineman, Ed Alexander, Dave LaRussa, Charlie Morris, Kimberly Kraft, Margie Rye, and somebody else who's probably not hiding under the console. But my remembrances of the station were going to the University of Arizona and living a couple blocks from the U of A, where music was my life. That and irregulated substances, I think, at that time. And my stereo was the biggest thing, and I can remember probably the hottest record on my turntable was Neil Young's Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere. And lo and behold, this radio station came on the air out of nowhere. The song that I remember them playing was In the Court of the Crimson King. I think they played it every 4 hours. And I went, I kind of dabbled with ham radio and put a radio station on the air at the high school I went to. And I looked at that and I said, oh, I'm going here. And so that radio station lasted, I think it came on the air in March, and it lasted until about the time school went off, and I left to go away for the summer, and I came back, and it was quite a different thing. But I'd made the decision to kind of go to a little broadcasting school up in Minneapolis, came back down here. I knew Clark Gallagher, and he said, come on down, I'll give you a job. And I got here, and he wasn't here. And the rest is another story of calling up and getting hung up on and doing an interview with Jim Brady in the studio, who was a staff member. What was it like back then? This, of course, was in the height of the Vietnam War. We'd gone through the Jefferson Airplane. We'd gone through the Beatles, had broken up in 1969. But the essence of the era was that the politics and the change that was in the air, and it was a very turbulent time for a lot of people, Kent State, the Vietnam War, protests and all that. But that music is what stuck that generation together. And there was huge amounts of innovation in the record industry and a whole lot less research than there is right now. I can just remember taking many of the major albums that are still played on the classic rock stations today out of the cellophane, walking next door to the post office, and picking them up and bringing them back and putting them on the turntable and playing them. We worked for a very interesting guy by the name of Alvin Korngold, who was a bit thrifty, to say the least. As a matter of fact, the studio was in the news booth of Radio Mexicana, and I think it was about 6 feet wide and about 8 feet long, and two people could hardly stand up in it when we were there. And things went on and evolved, and a couple of years in, after things had turned around, I was looking for an announcer, and I got a tape from a guy named Jim Ray, and basically invited him to come out and join our staff. He arrived, and along with Jim Brady and John Shook and Matt Siegel and Dave Gordon, there were kind of three waves of people that went through there. The original group, of which Gene Thayer was a member of. The second group that I would call the 48 East Broadway group that included Jim Brady, myself, a couple of people, Dennis Alvord, and some other people that went through. And then I think it really started to gel when we moved over to the second floor of the Lawyers Title Building. That's when Matt Siegel and Dave Gordon came in and Jim Ray joined the staff. As we moved upstairs to a suite that actually had a window in it, the seventh floor suite over at the Lawyers Title Building, we were in this kind of time cave before. Things started to happen, and we actually started to experiment a little bit with formatting at that particular point. And I stayed until, I believe, 78 or 79 and was lured away by KTKT. Jim stayed and probably took the station to its highest precipice with the help of the Sandusky money and some good choices he made in terms of personnel. That would be the era that I remember.
A lot of folks came and left in the first months of KWFM in 1970 as the station tried to find its way in the new age of FM radio. Gene Thayer returned to his hometown of Tucson to make the possibilities of FM underground radio a reality.
I came down from Canada just before Christmas of 69. A guy here in Tucson called me and said, Tucson needs a FM radio station, and there's a guy named Alvin Korngold. Well, I knew a little bit about Alvin, but not a whole lot. Jumped in the kit, drove down here, and met with Alvin. We didn't like each other right off the bat. I'll get this puppy put on the air for you, and I will staff the entire joint. Let's make it a, quote, underground, close quote, outlet, you know. And he says, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, we'll play all the anti-war stuff, all the political crap, and all the good stuff in between. That's what's selling now. You want to make money. I'm not here to make money. I'm here to perform a service for the people of the town I was born in. Anyway, we came on live, and my staff showed up. We got the ball rolling, and I told everybody, here's the deal. You cannot compete. You know, we're calling ourselves underground, and that is Bravo Sierra. Every record you're going to play is made by a big, huge corporation with lots of shareholders, and they want to make money. So let's see if we can't sell some of these records for them just by playing them. And since you can't compete with all the talent involved, shut up and play the records. If you got something earth-shattering to say, go ahead and say it. When we actually turned the thing on legally, we sort of knocked KTKT, which was ruling back then. We knocked them down a whole lot of notches. And a couple of friends of mine owned electronics, radio, phonograph players, stores, all that kind of stuff.
Jerry's Audio.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They sold out, all of them sold out of FM radios. We had people going down to Nogales buying FM radios down there in Mexico because you couldn't get them here.
Wow.
The cops call that a clue. I fought constantly. I just wanted to be a disc jockey, sit in that booth, do my thing. For the first few months, we get $350 a month.
$1.60 an hour, right?
I don't know. I didn't care, you know. That was kind of bad. Anyway,
same reason we all didn't care.
I didn't get into radio for the money.
Yeah.
Although, and I found that other things I've done that I didn't get in it for the money, I got in it because I liked doing it. I made lots and lots and lots of money every single time. Isn't that odd?
Next up, Fred Casanova joins us. A student at the University of Arizona and working at KUAT-TV, he jumped at the chance to work at KWFM when he heard about openings there.
I got on with KWFM around May of 1970. It was a very, very interesting time. I think Tucson was starting to discover what FM album rock radio was all about. Some of the AM stations had tried to do something in that area, late night shows, but just weren't able to pull it off very well.
But who had FM radios?
Nobody, and even KWFM, when they first went on the air, was monaural. They didn't even have a stereo transmitter, and it was the day we got the stereo equipment and a stereo board, it was like, boy, we're big time now. It was pretty wild. So yeah, you saw a big influx of people in my age group start looking for the stereo equipment, especially auto radio and that kind of thing. So it was really exciting for us because we knew we were on the forefront. We had a big contingent of university kids listening to us, and a lot of high school kids started listening to us, and you knew that it was a wave beginning in motion there.
It kind of reminds me of the difference between like going from albums to CDs to MP3s. I mean, AM to FM was a big jump in the way people listen to music.
Well, it was a completely different because Top 40 radio was so structured and was so intent on the commercial side of what was coming out of music that we were, and especially because our programming was very freeform, we had a lot of leeway on what to play. We were playing cuts off of albums that you would never hear on Top 40. And matter of fact, we had a whole jazz show done very early in the morning from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. with Bob Allen that was pretty much his personal collection of jazz records.
KWFM embraced its underground radio status, which played out in music that reflected political and social changes in the country, and that presented a new set of challenges.
Yes. A lot of things happened right in that time period. I mean, we were coming out of the Beatles breaking up to Woodstock. The Vietnam War was continuing on, and I guess there were some sensitivities to the Kent State, Jackson State killings. Crosby, Stills, and Nash came out with a single called Ohio that you wouldn't hear on Top 40, and matter of fact, the station ownership was a little reticent to play it on KWFM, but there were a few of us that slipped it in every now and then because we thought it was important. The political environment was being reflected in a lot of ways in music. Kids knew that it was out there, and I think it needed to be heard.
On September 18th, and then October 4th in 1970, we witnessed two greats of rock and roll, both 27 years old, taken from us too soon. Casanova remembers the shock and sense of responsibility he felt on the air.
Actually, it was amazing that both of them died while I was there at KWFM. And when Jimi Hendrix died, Clark Gallagher, our program director at the time, knew some people in the music business that were very close with Jimmy and managed to get him to come into the station. And one of them had written a poem about the struggles that he knew Jimmy had been going through. And it was a very touching moment. And it was just a very sad time for everybody and kind of a shock to us all to see one of the stars that we really revered as one of the greats of the music business for our generation to die like that, and then followed closely by Janis Joplin. And I used to, at that time when Janis died, we were going off the air after my shift at 2 a.m. And so I just had to do some kind of a tribute to her for several nights in a row there and play one of her songs as the last song of the day. So it was kind of tough to see those people go.
KWFM nurtured many now familiar voices in the radio business. A trio of them join us now, and they talk about how they got their starts at the radio station.
My name's Jim Brady, and I worked at KWFM from 1971 through 1980. But my introduction to the station actually was when I was in high school. I'm one of the few guys that's actually a local Tucson boy here. And I remember in my junior year of high school seeing an article in the school paper called The Trumpeteer talking about how someone had gotten a construction permit. So that's before the station had gone on the air for an FM station here in town. I was, 16 at the time, but I ran right down and I applied for the job. So was there for a really long time, obviously 9 years, and had a great time. A couple of the things, I think most people know what we were playing on the air. Obviously, we were extraordinarily progressive relative to what was happening in radio otherwise, Top 40. We had a wall of records, and essentially you could play any song you wanted off of any of this huge wall of records.
There were
limits. But this is the honest to God truth. I remember playing the 1812 Overture one day at noon because I thought it was a good thing to play. So I think everybody, and I'm sure that we'll be talking a lot about the music, but there's a couple of things, and Alan Browning and Jim Ray are here. And I just want to bring up a couple of things for all you guys that used to listen to KWFM in the old days and kind of get some input on this, because radio these days is pretty doggone slick, right? And they have all of these wonderful singing jingles and liners and things. But I'd like to bring up a few of the things that we did every single day. Do you remember Community Classifieds?
Absolutely.
12 noon every day. This is Jim
Lost
Ray.
Lost Dogs.
And the Lost Dog Report.
How many times can this dog get lost? Yeah. You know, the same dog over and over again.
Okay, lost a black and tan hound dog, a male. He's about 12 years old. Lost around Ina Road at the 1200 East block. There's a reward. Also lost a small Yorkshire Terrier that's mostly black in color, and he was lost on 29th Street right near the Marshall School.
Smiley's again at 3143 East Speedway.
All right, time for community classifieds. Forcella Seagull 4 hang glider with serpine harness. Forcella Gibson B25 12-string guitar with a case, about 8 years old. Excellent condition. $325 for make an offer. 8-track card deck in good condition, hardly used. $35 or make an offer.
And these were on 3x5 cards that we read two or three times a day.
Well, the community classified, I think what you could do is you could come up and you gave us $2 or it was $1 or something, and that money went to the went into the teal. Somebody's
the
teal.
General fund.
The general fund.
I don't think so. I remember a lot of the money kind of went other places.
Like I said.
You are a part of the sound of life in Tucson. KWFM Stereo, one of the Alvin L. Korngold stations, operating continuously in a carrier reference frequency of 92.9 megahertz with an effective radiated power of 28,500 watts, using multiplex transmitters located near Grant Road and North First Avenue, Tucson, Arizona. Our studios and offices are located in Suite 210 of the Lawyer's Title Building at 199 North Stone Avenue downtown. Your requests, comments, and suggestions are always welcome. KWFM Tucson, yours always when you need a friend.
Ed Alexander.
Ed Alexander here, and Bob Fineman. What was it, Bob Allen back then?
Yes, if you listened in those days, you knew me as Bob Allen. Bob. That was an Alvin Korngold invention, isn't it?
Well, so before the Zodiac news, was the old AP teletype machine. It was 100 pounds, and it shook every time and you could hear it down the hall. We were upstairs on the second floor there across from the federal building, and there was a window with, I think, a sheet or a rope out just in case, because we didn't have a fire escape. And if it, heaven forbid, we were dead because we couldn't get down those wooden steps fast enough.
Right.
And there was an empty storefront, which is just a glass. And, you know, we were hippies, and we were revolution, and we were waiting for a Molotov cocktail to come through that window, and we would be gone, man. I mean, because we were the revolution at the time. So there was no way out.
I have, to this day, in my collection at home, a large number of albums with a rubber stamp on them that say, property of KWFM, illegal to remove.
I brought it for the scrapbook for later.
I brought one.
For
the photo op.
As long as you guys don't arrest me, I brought one.
I've got a bunch of those. Alvin invented me. My introduction to Alvin was during the days I managed the original loft on 6th Street, which was Tucson's first and only pornographic movie theater. Alvin Korngold was one of the only places that allowed us to buy advertising to promote our films. I called one day to make a purchase of advertising, and Alvin answered and was happy to make a deal, but also told me that my voice demanded an audition of some sort. Walked in the door, and I auditioned, and I was hired. Rod Shields was the program director in those days when I worked there. Alvin said, "This is great, but your name has been all over the paper as the guy running the dirty movie theater. I can't have people think that I hire weirdos." So you're not Bob Fineman, Robert Allen Fineman. You're Bob Allen. That's how that got started. And then Alvin found I spoke Spanish as well as I spoke English. And he went over to the guys at KVT, and they said, "Yeah, he does." And being the thrifty fellow he was, he looked at me and said, you're two for the price of one. This is great." So we would do four-hour shifts in those days. You were live for 4 hours, and I would do my 4 hours in English, and then I'd have an hour or so for lunch and do 4 hours in Spanish.
The Spanish part that I remember is I was doing mornings at the time. Brady, you were doing nights, but we all lived there. I mean, we were there 24/7 anyhow, because what else were we going to do? And so at 6 o'clock in the morning, they would turn on the AM, KEVT, the Spanish AM, and the Spanish DJs would come in, and they were like,
if they got there, or else I was on the graveyard shift, so I would turn.
If they made it,
you would
up the
come
stairs,
on the air
actually,
in English, and I would come on the air in Spanish doing an English shift.
And
all
if
night.
We're allowed to tell stories, you know, they would bring their friends and their lady friends.
We brought drugs; they brought women.
And we'd look at these guys, and they were old guys compared to us. And we're going, okay, this is what we had to look forward to, when we get old. And it was just crazy. And then we'd go in and we'd flip it on. We'd start playing whatever we were playing. But back in the day, you didn't wear any shoes, and I brought my dog. And my dog would sit under my feet for the whole 4 hours, and she hardly ever barked, and it was good. But it was just all free form. It was a wall of records behind us and a console in front of us. Telephone on the left that Mrs. Korngold always called on and went and make her requests. Yes. And you had to play because she was the boss's wife. And it didn't matter what time of day it was. It could be 3 o'clock in the morning. Mrs. Korngold would call and make a request. And you would play it. But otherwise, you played whatever the heck else you wanted to play. I remember playing, you know, the first time playing the first Elton John album and the Rod Stewart and the stuff like that. I mean, we were playing, of course, this was in the beginning of the 70s. So we were playing, of course, all the great stuff, the Doors and stuff from the 60s and the Airplane right. and all that.
Absolutely. And there were some other specialty programs. Alan Browning's here. Alan did the jazz show. We had that, Sunday night, the jazz show?
And yeah, remember, it was a little bit later on, yeah. But yeah. For a long time, after many a hard-partnering weekend, I'd stumble down there from 9 to midnight and play what really kind of became contemporary or smooth jazz, you know, the more rhythmic stuff. And it had a following.
We also had a program, the Classical Showcase.
The Bluegrass Hour.
The Bluegrass Hour. Chip Curry that did the Bluegrass Hour. So it was great because obviously the whole feel of the station was centered around rock music. But we certainly stretched our legs, no matter how you look at it, in a whole lot of different directions. Certainly much, much further than anybody else in town ever had.
Early in KWFM's history, we stayed in the studio and played music. When we finally ventured out to do a community event, we had no idea what we had gotten into.
What happened at Gates Pass was really kind of the first time that we had gotten out there in public and as a radio station had promoted, shall we say, an event. And it all started very innocuously in that the program director of the station at the time, Mark Young, decided just kind of offhandedly that we would have, and I remember this very specifically, a cultural and spiritual gathering at sunset. I remember it specifically, a cultural and spiritual gathering at sunset at Gates Pass on this particular evening. And we found a local rock band whose the euphemistic name was Dog Dirt, although that was not their actual name, and thinking, you know, maybe a few hundred people would show up. I mean, honestly, we had no clue whatsoever what the power of the radio station was at that time. As the sun went down and the evening moved on, it became very obvious very quickly that way more than 100 people had shown up. In fact, the number was in the thousands. And essentially what happened is that so many people showed up, and ultimately the estimate was at over 5,000 people. If any of you can possibly imagine what 5,000 people at the top of Gates Pass would look like. Eventually what they wound up doing is the Sheriff's Department closed off Gates Pass Road at Silverbell and at Kinney Road. People were parking in the road. They were actually just stopping their cars. Ultimately, they had to tow people off of the road, arresting a few people. But at one point, I remember announcing over the PA system, hey, if you've got a match, you know, or a lighter, come on, light it up. Let's see how many people are out here. And standing, not the entire mountainside on both sides lit up. And it was absolutely amazing. And that was the point at which I realized we were in serious trouble. So actually, I have a number of articles here, which the heading of the article is Party Participants Face Towing Fees. 29 autos removed from road. Expense to owners placed at $1,740. They talk about it as we were promoting a rock concert. You know, and this was the whole thing. And the sheriff's department, oh, they were promoting a rock concert. It was nothing of the sort. I mean, it was this offhanded thing. Okay, well, let's go up to Gates Pass and, you know, see if anybody shows up. And ultimately, over 5,000 people showed up to that event.
When we come back, we'll revisit more of the events that KWFM is a part of. Kites, concerts, and birthday parties.